From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's June the 13th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, Energy Secretary Bodman is headed to the Mideast, and the EIA says ethanol and higher CAFE standards should work together in the coming decades to reduce U.S. oil consumption by about 2 million barrels a day. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly, and then I'll take you through the prevented planting provisions of the federal crop insurance programs. It all comes up on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Taking a look in Chicago at the numbers as they settled on this Friday afternoon. July corn futures or July wheat futures, $8.82, up 31 for the day. September at $8.99.5, up 31.5. And December futures at $9.22, 30.5 cents higher. Now the corn pit, July futures, $7.31.75, up 22.75. September at $7.45.75, 23 cents higher. And December corn at $7.65, 25.5 higher. March futures $7.76.5, up 23.75. July soybean futures $15.60, 23.5 higher. The August contract in the bean pit $15.59.75, up 21.75. And September futures $15.40 for the day, 16.5 cents higher. November beans $15.31, up 18.5 cents. July bean meal at $409.20, up 70 cents. July bean oil $66.19, that's down a penny on the afternoon. June live cattle futures for the day at $95.57.5, 75 cents higher. The August futures at $102.27.5, up 67.5. And the August feeder cattle at $109.15 are a dime higher for the day. September futures up 15 cents. They settled at $111.25 a hundredweight. June lean hog futures at $73 from the CME Group, $73.40. Down 7.5 cents for the June lean hogs. July futures at $73.60, up 52.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's a look at the outside markets for the afternoon. Futures like this in the crude oil July contract at $134.40, down $2.34. August at $135.80, down $1.58 a barrel for the day. July ethanol futures at $2.81.1, up 12. August contract at $2.80, up a dime for the day. Natural gas trading at 12.61.5, down 18.3. The August futures at 12.71.3. That's down 18.2 for the day. Heating oil, that's diesel fuel, down a dime and 3/10 at 383.9 for the July contract. August at 386.5, down 10.1 on the afternoon. July propane futures at 180.2. They're a dime and 3/10 higher. August futures at 180.2, up 9.7. Gold futures trading the June contract at $870.30 an ounce, up $1.10 on the afternoon. July futures at 871.20, up 120. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,236 now stands 95 points higher for the day, and the U.S. dollar at 74.15 is up 0.29 for the afternoon. Here's what the forecast looks like for the two-state region tonight. A severe thunderstorm watch in effect for portions of eastern and southern Illinois and much of Indiana. That until 8 o'clock Central, 9 Eastern time. A flash flood watch in effect for northwestern Illinois through early this afternoon for north central and northeastern, all of central and neighboring portions of southern Illinois through this evening. And a flash flood watch is in effect for extreme northwestern Indiana through this evening and for all of central and neighboring portions of southern Indiana through late tonight. Tonight in northern Illinois, partly cloudy in northern Indiana and central sections cloudy, some showers, a few thunderstorms during the evening hours, then becoming partly cloudy overnight.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Urbana-Champaign. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I want to talk a bit about the weekly trade, about the daily trade, and then what we see in the field. Let's start with the daily trade. Tell me how things proceeded and why corn futures are up sharply again today.
Well, mostly the flooding areas are still... It's just impossible to assess the damage here, and it's surely the part of the reason is the media, the major news broadcasters just continue to show what's happening in Iowa and even Wisconsin and Michigan. They have not shown much about Illinois and Indiana yet, Todd, but certainly the media attention and the flooding was still on the forefront of the minds of traders. I think surprisingly to many, the wheat market was sharply higher, and I think that actually led to that second stage to the upside and new daily and new weekly highs that we saw shortly after lunchtime. The wheat was a big reason for that. Probably also the new weather model showing another round of storms for Sunday night, Monday morning, for especially the eastern half of Iowa. That's a big issue. And one of the things I heard again this afternoon after being on the air with Dave from one of our Chicago contacts was the demand side is now starting to really worry about where they're going to get their supplies for the next 3 months if we've got this kind of decimation in our crops out west in the central part of the Corn Belt and southern parts of the corn and bean belts. That's starting to take a lot more hold. And my first question was, well, why are they hitting the July D's corn spread so hard and the July losing almost another 3 cents to the December? And now we've got very close to full carry at about 33 cents on that spread. And the answer was, because the locks are shut down, there's nothing you can do in terms of getting old crop corn because the sellers are so unwilling to sell it right now. And so the spread seems to be under the short-term issues of problems with river basis because of the flooding and also the stark realization that it doesn't do any good to come in and buy July because there's not going to be any physicals that's going to be traded in that time period if we keep this kind of a weather pattern.
Let's talk a little bit about corn. Dave Dickey and I were having a discussion, actually about corn roots, just before we came on the air. I had been talking to Emerson Napsiger. He was through Iowa this week. There were two things. You mentioned all of the flooding that Emerson had to say about the flooding and the condition of the corn crop. One is that corn underwater, soybeans underwater, early in the earlier part of the year, in May, when temperatures were cool, probably could withstand it for a few days. But if it's been underwater now for any length of time with the heat from last week, and if that were heat to continue, that there's no way that the crop will make it through. He simply says it'll probably be dead. It's awfully late in the year. I don't suppose you could get much of a corn crop out of it if you tried to replant. You might be able to get something out of a bean crop, and then you have to start looking at how many acres really have been lost, what will the June 30 acreage be from USDA, and even if it's close, what will the yield be nationwide? Given a normal growing condition from here on out and a shallow-rooted corn system, how much trouble might we be in?
Well, if we turn off hot and dry, that would be the worst-case scenario because what corn and beans that are viable and going to be probably our top-end yielding crops and fields out there, if we turn off hot and dry, you'll take the top end off of those also, especially given that the vast majority are probably still going to pollinate a little bit later than normal, even though they're coming along fairly well. I think another thing that I realized that I wasn't aware of by the general media or the general man on the street kind of guy and gal is that the crop insurance really plays a big role nowadays, much more than it did maybe 25, 30 years ago. Farmers just don't have the ability to come back in and get things planted again and take the risk of not having hardly any yield and sacrifice being able to take prevented planting. So I think not only is it the issue of how long the fields have been saturated, it goes back to why, as a producer, would I want to take the risk of messing up crop insurance? And even producers I've talked to It's right around the Danville, Indiana, Vermilion County, Illinois, Vermilion County, Indiana. Those producers are starting to say to me, if I can't get even beans planted by next week, I'm really going to be butting up against July 1. Why would I mess that up? Why don't I just go ahead, if I've already got my corn planted once, why don't I just take preventive planting and leave that field fallow and take whatever federal money I can get? So I think, again, it goes back to the beans could be and probably are as bullish, if not more, than corn when it's all said and done, because keep in mind, we only need about a 2.5 bushel yield decline on USDA 73.7 million harvested acres to take us down to zero carryover. So I guess that I'm in that kind of camp where it's not just the corn that it's too far gone at this point, that if farmers can't really do much after next week, then the beans are too far gone as well, practically speaking. And I talked to a farmer right before we went on the air from Jacksonville, Illinois, and he said anybody south of Jacksonville could not get any beans planted except today, and even that was about a five-hour trick before the next system came through.
Yeah, the preventive planting dates, I think, for corn in Illinois, and this is, well, they've passed for corn in Illinois.
Right.
There were a few counties that were like May 31 in deep southern Illinois, but most of it's June 5. And I want to say it's June 15 and June 20 for soybeans, about the upper third of the state. And we'll hear this actually in later in the program with Gary Schnitke, actually just with me. I got the numbers from Gary Schnitke, but I believe that's June 15 and June 20 on the preventive planting for corn, but or for soybeans. But really, it does play a big role in whether those crops will go back in, because if for every day that you pass that, if you try to put that same crop back in, you lose 1% of your crop insurance payment. So,
well, like I told another media outlet that was not very well versed, like you folks are, on what happens in production and of agriculture, is everything has to be in step and in lock position. And if you got herbicide down, and you've got your seed already bought, and you've got a certain type of manufacturing process when it comes to today's nowadays agricultural production, if you're going to get a 13 billion bushel crop, you can't have any hiccups or mistakes. And my gosh, when you talk about Iowa in a 500-year flood right now, that's a hiccup and a mistake. And I think that's what I think the market is starting to get their hands around, is that, my goodness, this hasn't happened in literally five centuries in Iowa. And I think it's going to take some time for the Chicago trader, the John Doe up there on LaSalle Street, to understand exactly what's at stake here right now.
Actually, I think this is our second 500-year flood in about since 1993.
Yeah, exactly. And in this one, you know, some in the Iowa area have been saying this is worse than 93. And
right.
it kind of goes back to the old mindset in this trade that you can always make, you know, rain makes grain, and you can't push that too hard, but traders tend to want to do that, so you just have to be patient if you're a producer and let things develop.
Well, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. That's Mike Zuzolo. He's with Risk Management Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That one happens each and every Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Dave Dickey is here now. He'll help us take a complete look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Land Grant, the University of Illinois.
In agricultural news, the U.S. Energy Secretary will next week attend a global meeting of oil-producing and oil-consuming nations in Saudi Arabia. The main topic of discussion will be the effects of record oil prices on the global economy. The Saudis have said the main problem for the recent oil spike is speculators, while the U.S. maintains flat production among OPEC nations is to blame. Today, OPEC cut its forecast for global oil demand growth for 2008 for the third time this year. OPEC economists say, quote, the slow U.S. economy, along with current oil prices, will have its effect on oil demand in the U.S. in the second half of this year. Energy Information Agency Administrator Guy Caruso says ethanol and higher gas mileage standards will reduce U.S. dependence on foreign oil over the next 20 years.
Taken together, the updates to these two standards produce a substantial reduction in oil use and oil imports in our long-term outlook. EIA estimates that the combined effects of the CAFE and RFS update are to reduce U.S. oil use by about 2 million barrels per day by 2030.
At that rate, the U.S. would need to import about 44% of its energy requirements from foreign oil, down from the roughly 60% it imports today to meet energy needs. A letter sent to Congress yesterday from the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Farmers Union says that food companies are wrong when they claim ethanol is responsible for higher food prices. The letter says more than 80% of a food's commodity cost comes from processing, transportation, distribution, and retailing, all of which are tacked on after the raw grain leaves the farm. Lawmakers voted yesterday to subpoena nine companies responsible for analyzing the most dangerous food entering the country as part of an investigation looking at possible circumvention of governmental import alerts. Federal investigators have been told that it is a routine practice for private labs to test food until a clean result is obtained without Food and Drug Administration knowledge. The European Union today says it will investigate whether soaring imports of U.S. biodiesel break global trade rules. EU Trade Chief Peter Mandelson says it will conduct anti-subsidy and anti-dumping investigations. The EU must issue its ruling by next March, a decision that could result in duties on U.S. biodiesel imports to the EU. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations, public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program and of Commodity Week. You can hear it on our website at willag.org anytime you'd like. That's willag.org. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural markets. Now up next, the massive amounts of rainfall throughout the Midwest have some farmers searching their insurance policies. I'll have more on final planting dates, late planting periods, and prevented planting payouts. Let's start with the easy stuff. Prevented planting does not apply to group risk plan or group risk income plan policies. Again, prevented planting does not apply to GRP or GRIP policies. The CAT plans, or catastrophic plans, do have a prevented planting provision, but unlike the other federal crop insurance plan, there is no provision to increase payments above 60%. So here are the definitions farmers will need to know. If they've taken an APH, CRC, IPRA, or CAT policy, final planting date, late planting period, and prevented planting payment. We'll work backwards. Prevented planting payments can be taken if acres have not been planted by the final planting date because of an insurable cause. This is scenario number one. The insured producer takes prevented planting payment after the final planting date and does not plant a crop for the year. The insured producer selects 75% coverage level. That results in $30,000 of total coverage or liability. You multiply that $30,000 times 60% to get a prevented planted payment. $30,000 times 60 equals $18,000 the insured producer would receive. Producers could have selected, by the way, a higher level of prevented planting coverage, either plus 5 or 10%, based on 60% available by the sale's closing date. Now, the final planting date, and consequently the late planting period, vary by crop and region. For example, the final planting date for corn in Illinois for all but the most southern counties is June 5. For most of the state, the final planting date for soybeans is June 20, June 15 for the northern third of the state. There is a 25-day long late planting period that comes immediately after the final planting date, which really makes that final planting date the final date to get a full insurance payment, but not the final date a crop can be planted. During that 25-day period, farmers can continue to plant the insured crop. but will take a 1% payout hit for each day. After the 25 days, should the producer still decide to plant the same insured crop, a maximum 60% prevented planted payment would be made. After the 25-day late planting period is passed, a different crop can be planted. There are short and long-term consequences for this decision. In the short term, the prevented planting payment is reduced. It is 60% times the selected coverage, and then because a different crop was planted, the payout is reduced again to a 35% of that number. The Scenario 1 $18,000 payment becomes a $6,300 insurance claim. The long-term consequence, farmers listen up on this point, the long-term consequence is that the insured producer will also have to accept a yield of 60% of APH for the year to be counted as part of their APH. For example, your APH is 40 bushels to the acre for soybeans. 40 times 60% equal 24 bushels to the acre to be recorded for APH that year and used in calculating APH for future years. Contact your crop insurance agent for complete details. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's a Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time now to talk with Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, and will help us take a look at the cash grain market for the afternoon. Hi, how are you, Bruce?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm very well. We don't have rainfall here yet, but I suppose it might be on the way.
It might be coming. We've dodged a bullet so far and been putting a lot of beans in the ground here the last couple of days.
I bet you have been putting a lot of beans in the ground the last couple of days. Guys are going full bore. They think they can get a crop out of the ground and make it pay.
That's what we're hoping for. At least the prices are doing their part to try and make it pay right now.
And are your basis levels holding up with the prices in Chicago?
Basis levels have been tending to erode back with it. Kind of a mixed bag on beans. As the board has been going up, we've seen the processors finally start to ease back a little bit. We're probably going to shove some meal demand into Illinois. I understand Des Moines and Cedar Rapids, the big bean plants there, are both shut down. Both cases are probably along the Des Moines River and the Cedar River, so who knows how long they're going to be out. SIF beans were down like 7 cents yesterday. But you have to look at it. With the river closed down for a while, who wants to spend $750,000 to buy a bean barge and then have that money tied up sitting for a few weeks to a month? Mid-Miss closed from south of Hannibal to up to Muscatine, and then the St. Louis Harbor District is closed also. So it's interesting. There's just some amazing photos of Iowa and southern Indiana floating around out here.
Oh, I've seen a couple of those come through as a PDF. I saw a PDF file with maybe 20, 25 photos from southern Indiana. Just incredible. And did you get the one with just the plant, the John Deere tractor, and looked like a DMI planter, I think, on the back end of that that's sitting out in the middle of the field? It's covered up to about the cab.
Yep, that's one of those that says, well, it could be worse, I think.
I hope he had that insured. That was just awful. All right, what are your bids for the day?
We are at $6.98 on nearby corn, $7.18 at New Crop Inn at Paxton, $15.35 on nearby beans, and $14.42 on New Crop. It's hard to say those numbers.
Yes, yeah, but it is. Okay, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostert is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, where he's the general manager. We talk with him on Friday afternoons right here on the Closing Market Report. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Lobster Day. Prior to the 20th century, lobster was not a popular food in the U.S. In fact, eating lobster was considered a mark of poverty, or as a food for slaves or lower members of society. And lobsters were also used as a fertilizer for farms. The market for lobster changed when modern transportation methods allowed the live shipping of lobster from ports to large cities inland. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Elizabeth Hamilton, wife of Alexander Hamilton, the first Secretary of the Treasury, is said to have served a new dessert treat to General George Washington. The highlight of the dinner party was ice cream. After its introduction, ice cream often appeared on the presidential Thursday dinner menu. By the way, an entry in Washington's ledger reveals that he purchased a cream machine for ice at Mount Vernon. In 1817, Richard Lovell Edgeworth died, an Anglo-Irish inventor. Among his many inventions and innovations was a turnip cutter, as well as various improvements in agricultural machines, including a one-wheeled carriage adopted to go over narrow roads. And in 1893, African-American inventor T.W. Stewart received a patent for a mop. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason on the line with us on a Friday afternoon to take a look at the weekend forecast and how things are shaping up in the Midwest for agriculture. Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weekend and this evening, please.
Well, I don't think we're done with the rain yet here in eastern Illinois, western Indiana. There's another area of rain in southwestern Missouri. It's been moving in this direction, and all the models are indicating, plus, that it's going to come through here. The cold front is still back to the west, and as the atmosphere recovers a little bit, we'll probably get into some more rain here, basically south of maybe Bloomington to St. Louis line. So that's the next thing on the docket is the rain tonight and maybe very early tomorrow in Indiana. And then we'll have a break with maybe more showers and thunderstorms on Sunday and late Sunday here and Sunday night as another cold front comes through. And then after that, looks like we had some good news for everybody. Looks like we're going to have maybe 4 to 5 days of fairly dry, comfortable weather. Probably lower than average dew points, lower than what we might expect this time of year. Temperatures maybe in 70s to low 80s and sunshine. So that should help dry things out, but then perhaps another round of showers and thunderstorms next weekend. So a somewhat dry period coming up next week, but we got to get to the weekend first.
We know, of course, about all the drastic flooding in southern Indiana, eastern parts of Iowa. But when you discussed maybe some rainfall there from a line Bloomington to St. Louis and south, that picks up a pretty good swath of Illinois.
Yeah.
And Springfield to St. Louis seems like south of there has been awfully wet for quite some time,
it
too.
It has been. There are two major areas of sogginess, as you might call it. Basically, central Illinois through central Indiana, southeastern Indiana, or southwestern Indiana has been one, and then, of course, up near up in Iowa through southern Wisconsin, southeastern Minnesota, a lot of areas affected there. The rain tonight could amount to an inch or more in some areas, so it's certainly if I were over in southeastern Illinois, Lawrence County area, along the Ember or Wabash, I'd certainly be keeping an eye on that. They've already had some rain today, but the good part is it was relatively quick moving. And then this weekend, I think the worst of the rain might actually, unfortunately, be up north Iowa, across northern Illinois, probably a little bit weaker by the time it gets down this far. But at this point, no rain is really needed anywhere. A few places could use it way far south in Illinois and Indiana, but not many places really need it. Iowa is just awash. We watched the Cedar River at Cedar Falls is cresting at 18 feet above the old record, which was actually not set in 1993. It was set back in the turn of the century. And it'll probably be the middle of next week before the river even falls to its old level. So there's a lot of water coming down into the Mississippi, and this is going to be something that's going to be bear watching over the next week or two.
Okay, thanks much. We appreciate you being with
us. All right, Todd.
All right, that's Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. located at the Illinois State Water Survey right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in for Commodity Week. That airs on WHOW out of Clinton at 8:30 a.m. on Saturday mornings, at 11:30 a.m. right here on this radio station, WILL AM 580 out of Urbana-Champaign. And, of course, you can listen to it online at willag.org. Right there, about 6 o'clock this evening. I'm Todd Gleason.